I brought with me something special. Of course, this is just a candle, but I brought this with me today to leave here if you like. You don't have to keep it if you don't want, but there's something special about this because recently I was in the Holy Land. I got to go. Never thought I would go a first time, but this was actually my third time, and it was a very amazing trip. I got to see so many things that I hadn't seen before, and one of the experiences I had was in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. This is also known as the Church of the Resurrection. It's right in Jerusalem now. It was built centuries ago, and in this place is where they believed Jesus was crucified, was anointed, was buried into this tomb there, and was also risen from the dead. And in the past, I was never able to get into the actual tomb area because the lines were so long. This time, I was actually able to go in. But there's a special thing that happens every year, and it's been going on really since the fourth century. There is a priest, and I'm going to share his words and explain to you. Every year, there is an Orthodox priest who goes in. All the lights are not lit, the candles and everything in the area, and he goes in with like a couple empty candles, and he says this one prayer over that has been said for years, and miraculously a light comes. It's known as God's holy fire, the light of Christ. So let me share with you what happens. It's known as the holy light. This is what the Orthodox would say, the Patriarch Diodor is what he says. I enter the tomb and I kneel in holy fear in front of the place where Christ lay after his death and where he rose again from the dead. I find my way through the darkness towards the inner chamber in which I fall on my knees. Here I say certain prayers that have been handed down to us through the centuries, and having said them, I wait. Sometimes I may wait a few minutes, but normally the miracle happens immediately after I have said the prayers. And from the core of the very stone on which Jesus lay, an indefinable light pours forth. It usually has a blue tint, but the color may change and take many different hues. It cannot be described in human terms. The light rises out of the stone as mist may rise out of a lake. It almost looks as if the stone is covered by a moist cloud, but it is light. And this light each year behaves differently. Sometimes it just covers the stone, while other times it gives light to the whole sepulcher, so that people who stand outside the tomb and look into it will see it filled with light. The light does not burn. I have never had my beard, you know, they have long beards. He said, I've never had my beard burnt in all the 16 years I have been patriarch in Jerusalem and have received the holy fire. The light is of a different consistency than normal fire that burns in an oil lamp. At a certain point, the light rises and forms a column in which the fire is of a different nature, so that I am able to light my candles from it. When I thus have received the flame on my candles, I go out and give the fire to the first to the Armenian patriarch and then to the Coptic, and then hereafter I give the flames to all the people present in the church. So let me see if I can do this. I don't know where I aim. Where am I supposed to aim this? That way? Okay. So this is, you can see all the people there surrounding the Holy Sepulchre, surrounding the tomb there in that actual church. And to the right bottom, that's where you would enter into it. And you have to, when you go in, then you have to crawl underneath, and only like two or three people can actually be in the tomb part at one time. And then, let's see if I got this. This is probably going to be a really weird picture. Nope, this one's, see? He's now bringing the light to everybody, and he's lighting everybody else's candles. And what also sometimes happens is there's all sorts of oil lamps throughout the church that miraculously light up and have a fire to them And this happens every year and has been happening for centuries. And I have, next picture might be the weird one that I took. Okay. You're probably going, oh my gosh, what is this? In the center where it's really zigzagged, that's a little window that you could peer into the tomb from the side. And I took this picture, and so I don't know what was going on at the time, but all of a sudden there was all this light that was emanating, and that was the picture I took at the tomb. But what I did do, and I have to go around here for a minute, is I bought some candles. They're very thin, they're kind of fragile, but there's a place where you can then light candles from the holy fire that's lit. They have it lit right there outside the tomb. And so you light the candles, and then you extinguish it, and then you can bring the light back to wherever you are. So I've brought the light back here for all of you here at university. So I'm just going to say a prayer that I usually say with that came from the Companions in Christ, but this is what I would say. Light of Christ, shine on our path, chase away all darkness, and lead us to the heart of God. So whenever you light a candle, you have the light of Christ here with you. We're going to switch gears here in just a minute. Just one last little sidebar. When I was in seminary and I was doing my internship at Asbury First in Rochester, I had taken Greek my first year, and this was towards the end of my second year, my middler year, and I was attending a staff meeting at the church. And the senior pastor at the time, Bob Hill, had been my Greek professor the year before, and I walked into his office and I said, uh-oh, because on a flip chart he had a whole passage from the scriptures in Greek. I'm like, oh no, he's probably going to ask me to translate it. And sure enough, he did. He's like, Carolyn, can you read this? I'm like, can I borrow your textbook for just a minute? You know, yeah. Fortunately, I was able to, but what it was, if we but walk in the light as he is in the light, then we have fellowship with one another. And that's a paraphrase from verse 7 of that passage from 1 John. And so it's all about us walking together in the light and about the word koinonia, having fellowship. Imagine if we all walked into the light, walked in the light as Christ did and treated each other that way. Imagine the fellowship that we could have with one another at all times. Okay, so this is another picture from the Holy Land. It didn't quite look like that in the day. Whoop. It didn't quite look like that and at the time frame. But this is what they consider was the upper room where Jesus would have had the Last Supper with the disciples. It's been obviously fortified and fixed centuries later, but this is where they feel that Jesus spent the time. And this is also where the disciples would have been hanging out after the crucifixion and resurrection. And this is where Thomas would be saying, I don't believe a word you guys are saying. So Thomas, he's been given kind of a bad rap throughout the years because he didn't believe. And why wouldn't he believe these disciples, his colleagues, who had been with, they've been together for the last 3 years, right? Doing ministry, going through all sorts of things. I don't know if there are any guys that were really good at joking as the disciples, but why wouldn't he believe? And sometimes, if you think about it, you know, we are a lot more skeptical today about things. We get telemarketers. We have all the things on the internet that are false. And so we have to be a lot more wary of things than we have in the past. But for some reason, Thomas needed to see before he could believe. And so Jesus came back again to reassure Thomas that it was him. And that's one of the things I think we need to remember, is that Jesus meets us wherever we are at. If we believe, then we see. But sometimes we're not quite there yet, and sometimes we really do have to see first before we can trust and believe. And so Thomas needed that reassurance because he wasn't there. And, you know, it was right after this crucifixion. It was right after Jesus' death, you know, being put in the tomb, and all of a sudden he's risen, the tomb is empty. I mean, this is a lot to take in just 1 week. So, or just a few days. And so all this was just too much at first. So Thomas, we call him Doubting Thomas, he's been given a bad rap, but he just wasn't ready to believe until he saw. And I want to share something since we're getting ready to go into communion here. I wanted to first say that some of you who came to the Maundy Thursday service, which I greatly appreciated, there's a wonderful book written called Faces at the Cross by J. Barry Shepherd. And he writes as if about the different characters that were there at the crucifixion or were nearby. And he also wrote some other things in this book. And this is Thomas's testimony. And Thomas is he's writing it as if he was Thomas. And I want to share this with you because since it was just right after everything happened, and Thomas still has more questions, and this is what he's asking, and yet he's also letting you know that he does believe. So here's Thomas' testimony. And he's looking at, if we look at it, J. Barry Shepherd quoted Luke 22, verse 15. And he says, "How I've longed to eat this Passover with you before my death." I should probably hit one of the things here. Not very good. There we go. There's Thomas. "Yes, they have always said I questioned everything. Too much for my own good, was the way they used to put it. Although, since that evening in the upper room, when he offered me his hands and side, the nail prints, spear wound to touch and know, I never doubted him again. And yet, I still have questions. For instance, what he meant when he told us how he wished to eat that supper with us just before he died. How I have longed, he said, as if that was a moment he had lived for all his days. How I have longed to eat this with you before I die. It gave us quite a shock, I can tell you. Him talking again like that about his death. But it was the longing that puzzled me at the time. Still catches, tugs the tangled cords of memory after all these many years. How I have longed. What could the Lord have meant by that expression of deep yearning? Might it have been because he knew the goal was now within his reach, that after 3 hard years of testing, trial, stress, and many disappointments, giving, always giving, pouring out his mind, his heart, his very soul, spilling forth so readily the vibrant life that was within him in acts of healing, feeding, loving, might it have been with some relief he caught sight of the end of his long journey, glimpsed the goal of which, fearful though it was to us, to him would mean fulfillment of his task, the long expected climax and conclusion of his pilgrimage? Was that perhaps why Jesus said he longed to share the feast with us, because it meant that all was nearly over? Another thought, could he have seen this supper as a fond farewell, one final feast with all of us before he faced the end alone? We certainly had shared enough, had plenty to remember and be thankful for that night. So much had happened since he called us from the boats, the sheds and shops, the hillsides of sweet Galilee. So many miles of journeying, so many mouths fed, miseries relieved. Everywhere we went, especially at first, there were crowds, crowds wanting something, food, freedom, a future maybe, something they could hope for, live for, shape their battered lives around, and start to dream again. Mostly they came, I think, because he loved them and could tell them so, yes, even those vast milling throngs, there was a touch, a sense, a spirit moving in across among those mobs of eager people. He told them, here at last, there he had a man who was concerned not for himself, who was not out to get himself elected, but who cared for every single one of them, children and tottering old dames, lepers, soldiers, robbers. I've seen them all transform by seeing him. So anyway, perhaps it was the thought of all we had shared, the memories, relationships we'd built up. He wanted to then to celebrate, to gather all together in one last and glorious evening of true fellowship before he said, farewell to us, the 12 who had walked with him all the way. And yet, I think there was even now, even more than this within that longing. He said it with such passion. I have never, even yet, been able to forget those words and just the way they sounded. How I have longed to eat this Passover with you before I die. Could it have been that he too was unsure that although he knew the fundamental fact that he must die, he did not understand precisely how and why this had to be fulfilled? It seemed to me as if in all he did that evening at the table, he too was finding meaning and enlightenment. As if in breaking bread and pouring wine, our Lord himself was being led, as we were through him, into a new and richer comprehension, into a full and final revelation that this, of course, was why it must be so, that only as a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies can it rise again and bring forth ripe new grain to form the loaf that feeds a hungry world. Yes, I believe it dawned on him as he was doing it that bread and being broken is available, means shared, becomes a part of many bodies, many lives. It multiplies itself in 12 or 20 or 20,000 ways, and soon is irresistible, a mighty act and united host of servants for the kingdom, and with the cup, so clear a symbol of his blood in that red wine. He saw, as we did, that his life poured forth would seal a new commitment, would form upon the altar of God's grace a whole new covenant that would replace the ancient, worn-out slaughter of the animals with one complete and final act, the sacrifice of God's own Son to show the world, to show us all the height and depth and majesty of the eternal glory of God's love, which gives itself forever or until we come at last and offer up our own lives in return. So as the meal progressed, we saw the Father and the Son convene together in his actions and in his words. We watched the faith take shape and the kingdom yet to be assume its royal form. Its sacramental lineaments, we were all witnesses at the birth of a new era and a new creation. So what followed afterwards, of course, is history. It shattered me. The whole thing was too much. And at the cross, I completely lost already. I had seen all I had seen and heard and tasted in the upper room the night before. I lost it all. And if it were not for his love, his grace, that sought me out behind locked doors, called me to touch and then believe, I would not be here at your humble table, ready now with you to break the bread and pour the wine as he did years ago. Yet I am here, here to tell you what I know, what I remember of that night and even more, what I believe will happen here and now as you and I take bread and wine together in his name. For it is with great longing that I too have longed to eat this Passover with you. And now in his name and in his presence, let the feast begin. Amen.